This week on the Special Ed Strategist.
Sure. So I was a preschool teacher, classroom teacher for a long time. I love working with little kids. I think they're so fun. I think it's the most enjoyable way to spend the day. They really keep you entertained and you can be in a classroom and be with them and learn so much. Yeah, your data is going to unlock people asking the right questions, because the problem is that parents often don't know the questions to ask. And that, I think, is where your observations as a parent and your research, you coming to the table saying, hey, I'm a little bit worried that I'm not getting more than just one word statements from my kiddo. Like, that, is that something that I should be worried about now? Is that something that I should think about later? Like, help unfold development for me to give me an idea of what's appropriate. That element of early intervention, a parent has options to pursue what their county or what their state can provide to them to investigate it. You do have to qualify for it. It's not like I instantly get it. You do have to qualify for it. And there are certain things that qualify you for it, which investigate your state, investigate your, you know, investigate the qualifications in general.
Hello and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am joined by my brilliant friend and early childhood powerhouse, Jackie Beach. She is the founder of Rally Family Support. Jackie is a fierce advocate for early development, a master at aligning teams, and a total pro at keeping everything centered around what matters most, your kiddo in a neuroaffirming way, whole child. So if you've ever felt stuck or unheard, this one is for you. Jackie, welcome, and thank you for joining me today.
Wendy, what an opening. I want to do this every day. Can you handle that?
It is all true. It is all true. And I know that you have such a gift and an insight that I'm hoping folks that are listening, parents, professionals, have a cup of coffee, a tea, a little notebook, and they're just going to jot down all of the excellence that you're about to drop.
Oh my gosh, you are the sweetest, and I can't thank you enough. This is such an opportunity. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Let's do it. So before we get started, folks that may be new to you, can you just give us a little bit about who you are, your background, and what led you on this journey here to support neurodivergent kiddos?
Sure. So I was a preschool teacher, classroom teacher for a long time. I love working with little kids. I think they're so fun. I think it's the most enjoyable way to spend the day. They really keep you entertained and you can be in a classroom and be with them and learn so much. And I specifically love early childhood because so much happens. It's such a period of development and there's so much data to collect. So when I was a classroom teacher, I, again, loved being in the classroom, but I really started to see when there were things that we needed to talk to parents about or moments where perhaps we needed to bring in interventionists or we felt like it was out of sort of our scope. That was super hard to have as a conversation to have as a teacher. I also ended up having, thankfully, I'm super blessed to have my own children. And when I was on the other side of the table and all of a sudden having a parent's perspective, it really hit me how difficult it can be to maybe perhaps think that you have to bring intervention into your life and think about getting support. You have to sort of adjust your expectations. You have to sort of think of things differently. And when I became an admin at the same school, I really took it as an opportunity to make sure we created a program that would allow parents to be informed and empowered and educated and to feel like they could be the quarterback. And that sort of let me understand that was my mission, what I want to do with my entire life. So I left that school and started my own thing, started Rally. And now I spend my days trying to show up for families and just doing everything I can to provide information and strategies and ideas to make them feel like they have momentum.
Yeah, and you're totally going to share those with us. And that story resonates with me. Those that don't know, Jackie and I know each other from a previous life. And just being on that side as a parent is really hard. It's overwhelming. And so it does become that mission. And that's why my mission is to help parents with the IEP process so that they don't have to feel overwhelmed. So combined, we're going to get everybody some tips and strategies. Before we dive in though, one more. I'm like, wait, but there's more. Tell me one thing that you do that may be a hobby or a pastime that doesn't necessarily align with your profession.
Okay. Well, you know this about me, so you have to have a surprised face, but I am a reader. I love reading. It's what I would do with all the time. If I had extra time, and if I do have extra time, I'm reading. I'm a big fan of having that as something to look forward to and as a way to enrich the day.
Do you have a favorite genre?
Oh, no way. That's like impossible. It just depends on my mood and it just depends on what I'm into. But I think making it a part of your daily life to read 10 pages of something is just a really great habit. And, you know, it's sort of it's a great thing to model for your kids. New ideas and new things and discovering something you'd never thought of through a book.
All right. So tell us, why is it important for parents to recognize those early struggles? We're talking about little littles. And how does noticing that? I'm just diving in. We're just going for it, going for the jugular, right? So let's set the stage. So we talk about parents, we talk about them, you know, whether it's their first kiddo or several down the line, they're kind of recognizing some struggles. And as a parent, you're thinking, all right, is this normal? You know, how do I notice this? Is this, you know, how do I move forward? What should I do?
Okay, so I think having a mindset that early intervention and seeking help and information is a great step is your first thing that you should sort of do. Because I think if you feel like perhaps you want to investigate something about your child's development, no matter what age your child is, there are people and there are sources for your own edification, for you to find answers. So I think the first thing to do is to create a mindset for yourself and whoever you're parenting with that information is power, knowledge is power. And go find sources that allow you to understand what's age appropriate, what's developmentally appropriate. Also, perhaps, you know, having a healthy mindset about how much you should worry is important, because I think as parents, we forget, especially for new parents, my empathy chip for new parents. I mean, your world is rocked, everything has changed, and you have to take on a whole new mindset and a new perspective that often is associated with really worrying. So I think finding support systems, understanding that if you need to get information about support, that's a great first step, and don't be afraid to ask for it.
And you brought up kind of worried and scared. So as a new parent, you're right, because everything seems overwhelming. It can be seen that way, and it can seem scary. So at what is our balance of worry of like, or, you know, when should I start asking? Or just ask, be an informed person, start asking everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think data is your friend, right? Seeking information. Your job is to be an observer. Your job is to be a detective. Your job is to look around and collect information about your child. You are your child's first teacher. I think it's valuable to have a really good relationship when possible, if possible, with your pediatrician, because they're going to be a baseline of information. Our well child appointments can be very quick, and you can kind of want to get you in and get you out. So finding the courage to say, I want to learn more and I need more information, and finding pediatricians or specialists that you have that comfort level with to ask questions and to say, nope, I'm confused. I need some more help with this. I don't get it. That's a really big way to start to seek support.
And that's where it's helpful to have your questions kind of written out, so you've had some time to process them when you bring them in. What are some most common struggles that you see at home that kind of start to signal, let's take a pause, let's investigate that this could mean we need to get some additional support?
I think of it in categories. And again, I'm not a physician. I'm not a developmental pediatrician, right? I'm coming through all of this with a lens of when a child enters preschool and then enters a school system. But I think when you're at home and you have littles, and a lot of my clients, we talk about this, you know, if you have access to written documentation, whether it's an app, a handout from your pediatrician, you know, even if you find something realistic online or in a book, realistic, not a, you know, a rant from somebody who you don't know, like something realistic that is real data. You can look at that and you can start to see categories of development, right? Like physical movement, gross motor, you see language and communication, you see cognitive, and you start, these things are broken down for you in these categories by subject and also in timeline, right? And it will sort of help you understand, like, development is not an exact science. There's a window here. So if you have a kiddo who's at home and you're thinking, wow, they're really not crawling or perhaps rolling over or taking the first steps in this window that I've been provided as perhaps when it should occur, that's a great opportunity to have a concrete data point to go talk to your pediatrician about, right? If you are thinking, okay, my preschooler really, really has all of these behaviors happening at preschool. There's so much going on where they're really not enjoying their school experience. I feel like they're not communicating to me and their peers with receptive and expressive language in a way that feels okay to me based on my data points, based on my own observations, because parents are they're the best researchers and the best observers in the situation. Parents have the most data. They are the experts. So if you take those things and you go to your your doctor and you say, look, I have this list. I understand this is my box that we should be thinking about. I feel like we're not hitting these milestones or we've lost skills. That's a great jumping point to start the conversation with your pediatrician. Now, again, if you don't feel like that pediatrician is hearing you, then there's other steps you can take to either ease your worries or take next steps for intervention.
And I like how we keep saying, or you keep saying, data points, because oftentimes we think about, depending on kind of your community where you live in, there's can be a lot of comparison. And so, you know, everybody's going, you know, pro and everybody's doing this and everybody's doing that. So I think kind of just taking that break and thinking, okay, what do I see besides what do I hear? I mean, hear with your child, but like, the noise around me, let's hit pause and let's take some skills, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think your community can be a beautiful thing, or it can be something that becomes a comparison in a way that is so unhealthy. And that's in all areas of our life. It's not just with our kids. But I think having grounded documentation that is based in developmentally appropriate measures and science, and isn't just about someone deciding that they think something is age appropriate or they think something is how it should be done, but based on something a little bit larger than that. It does not only calm you down, Wendy, but it allows you to sort of ask educated questions about what scaffolding you can do to help your child receive that skill, or if it's just something that perhaps you need to investigate with an interventionist, you know?
And now having our smartphones, it makes it way easier for parents to do that. So if you're looking at a gross motor skill and you're out on the playground, you can take a quick little video and then show the pediatrician. Or if it's you're trying to think about receptive and expressive language, take a quick video. It doesn't have to be, you know, right all up in your kid's face. It can just kind of be on the side so they feel like they're being natural and not on the spot. That way, when you go to have those conversations, you have a little more data to back it up and say, all right, this is what I'm concerned about. Look at this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, something in your notes app where you're just jotting stuff down, knowing what you're looking for is really important, right? And anecdotal data that you are just sort of, wow, like this feels hard for my kiddo. This feels like a real struggle for them. How can I support them? And also, is their development connected to this struggle? Those are all things you can ask yourself and just take information, write it down, jot it down. You know, I think what happens is that parents, unfortunately, their opinion is can be undervalued in doctor's appointments, at the IEP table at schools. And I think that's an uphill battle sometimes. I think it's super important for parents to like assume positive intent from with who they're working with, but I think it's okay to think about the fact that you really want to advocate for yourself too. Like it's okay to say, I'm uncomfortable with this, I need more information. Or, hey, listen, the stuff I'm jotting down makes me feel like perhaps we're not understanding each other. Can you give me more information? I think parents have a right to do that, and sometimes you just need someone annoying like me to remind them that that's an option. And that doesn't mean you should always second guess people who are experts. It doesn't mean that you should constantly go into every doctor's appointment or every meeting with the school and you know nitpick every single thing. But it does mean that your instincts do count, and your data does count, and you are allowed to say, I'm a collaborative part of this. It's my kid. I'm allowed to be a part of it. And I think you kind of get away from things being combative when parents feel like they're a part of the conversation. And you actually get like amazing data. I mean, parents spend the most time with the kids.
I love how we're breaking this down in the sense of, you know, looking at different categories, right? So figuring out the category that you're concerned about with your little. But then more importantly, in order to collect data, to have that in frame in your head, you know, what am I looking for? So first educating yourself, like, so if I have a worry, educate myself on, is this really a worry? Is this not a worry? What could this be a worry of? And not Dr. Google, because that can go down a terrible rabbit hole. But I think, what are you looking for? Then you're going to be able to drill down to documenting of what you're going to bring to, whether it's the IEP table, the school, your pediatrician, whomever it may be. Then you have things documented when you know, okay, this is what I'm looking for. And then somebody can also say, all right, well, if we have to look at these, let's move this one to the top and let's look at this one a little closer, as this seems to be the most pressing right now.
Your data is going to unlock people asking the right questions, because the problem is that parents often don't know the questions to ask. And that, I think, is where your observations as a parent and your research, you coming to the table saying, hey, I'm a little bit worried that I'm not getting more than just one word statements for my kiddo. Like that, is that something that I should be worried about now? Is that something that I should think about later? Like, help unfold development for me to give me an idea of what's appropriate. But I think the systems that are in place, it's like we check it off the list, you go to your appointment, you're getting it done. Parents are just trying to get through the day, you know. And I think that if you have an idea of what you want your data to look like, when you get in front of people, it'll unlock the correct questions so you can really investigate with them as opposed to it being investigated for you.
I feel like you're giving us a cheat code.
No, I don't know. I mean, I
I
look.
like that. You're like, it's going to unlock the answers.
Well, you'll level up, right? Like, I, you know, as a new mom, I have two kids, and as a new mom, I was riddled with concern and worry for so many reasons. And I have a background in development. I have a background in classrooms. I have a background in early childhood. And I felt so powerless so many times. I think it happens to moms a ton, right? I'm sure it happens to dads too. I'm just saying from my perspective, as a mom, I felt powerless so many times. And I think that if we can stop and remember that moms and dads are coming from a place of like just trying to do the best they can and just trying to get the right information. And if they're seemingly, if they seem stressed, it's because they're nervous and they're afraid. If they feel tough and combative, it's because they're nervous and afraid. Like, what's behind what you're seeing from them? And if you can meet it with compassion and empathy, and the parent feels safe enough to collaborate, a lot of great information is going to flow from the parent. Other besides that, instead of them being defensive or it being a combative relationship between school and parents or caregiver and parents or interventionist and parent. So.
Which is exactly what we say about our kids, right? We always say, you know, kids aren't waking up to be naughty. So
Yeah.
what is the meaning of the behavior? And so that is correct in the sense of just that fear and love. So what are some low lift, kind of high impact, we're saying collect data, but what are some ways that parents can collect meaningful data that maybe we haven't really touched on so far?
Okay, so obviously there's the things we have touched on, which, you know, the jotting down the notes, the reviewing of information via video, all of those things. But I think read everything you can, get your hands on as much information as you possibly can, and then put your kiddos in situations with cohorts, with other kids, right? So take mommy and me classes, or if you can, daddy and me classes, if you can, if you have that luxury. If you can put your kiddo in settings, depending on their age, where there's another adult involved, like a daycare or a preschool setting, sports, little soccer groups, put yourself in situations where you are seeing different types of kiddos in different scenarios. Allow your child to have that opportunity. Because again, taking good data comes from taking it in like a bunch of different ways. So if you can have him or her go to the playground and or interact with other kids, that's different than just one-on-one, you back and forth, right? Like that's, you're going to get more information about your kiddo. So read everything you can, research everything you can, document as much as you can. But most importantly, like top to bottom, side to side, is connect, connect, connect. Have a relationship with your kid, be with them, play with them, read with them, enjoy them, because that's where you are going to do your most work anyway as your child's first teacher, and where you're going to collect the most valuable information. Because if you're comfortable, they're comfortable, there's trusted adult and child relationships happening, you're going to get accurate understanding, as opposed to if you're bringing anxiety or stress and it's not an organic back and forth with your kid, the story is going to be a little bit about your story and not so much what the kid is showing you.
What about survival mode, right? So we're in families that for multitudes of reasons that all of a sudden a parent is in survival mode.
Yeah.
What are we doing and how are we helping?
I think there's lots of reasons for parents to feel that way. For me, like I can only talk about how I want to support parents who are calling me when they're in that state. I think really, really listening, and I know you do this. I know you do this beautifully in your personal life and your professional life, but like really listening, don't assume you know what they're telling you. Don't jump to all your previous caseloads. Don't jump to all of your other clients or students or patients. Really hear them, because their lived experience and what they're thinking and the energy they're putting into it is very, very true for them. And you can have all the experience in the world, but you're not living their life. So I think when a parent is in survival mode, I think really, really listening to them, it doesn't mean you have to say, yes, I agree with everything you're saying, and I want you to sit in the spiral, but I think you need to hear them. And I think you need to listen for the cues that allow you to provide compassionate support. So if someone calls me and they just got, you know, some testing done, and they have a better understanding of what they need to do in a school setting. Even though I've been to so many IEP meetings, I need to stop and pause and remember that they've never been to one. So when they're asking questions that seem obvious to me, or they're panicked about something that there's no reason to panic about, I have to co-regulate with them. I have to be like a soothing energy, but not a know-it-all and not in a place of making this experience mine. It is their experience, and I am offering to walk alongside them. I'm not the captain. They are the captain. I just get to be with them in this. So when parents are in survival mode, you have to show up for them with like empathy and active listening and compassion. It really will guide everything if you let that be your guiding light.
And certainly if you kind of put that into a school meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you I've been in meetings where you just let the parent just have a moment.
Yeah.
And they just get it all out. And I've been in meetings where I was not in the lead of that meeting, and the person in lead wanted just to meet them with a wall. And that changes the dynamic of the meeting. It also changes the outcome, which then spirals the effect for the next time. So sometimes it is simple of just let it out. I know with my personal children, and even some when I taught juvenile delinquents in high school, I'd say, do you need help with this, or do you want me to just to listen?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that to an adult, but I'm just saying it's kind of that sense of, and
yeah.
9 times out of 10, they'd just be like, I just needed to put it out in the universe. I just need to get it off my chest. And now we can come up with a plan.
Completely. I think that clearing the energy in the air and allowing everybody to say what they need to say so you can truly collaborate is the most beautiful way to set up a truly individualized plan, right?
Yeah.
I tell my clients all the time, like, you can text, you can call, you can email me. I don't care if you're just telling me what you're scared of. That's okay. You can tell me what you're scared of, and I don't have all the answers, but I can hear, okay, you're worried about school refusal because you have a history of school refusal. Okay, well, that is a pretty awful thing to deal with as a family. It's pretty awful for the child. It's pretty awful for the parent. Doesn't make the teacher feel great. So like, what can we do to have front-loading conversations about school refusal? So your mornings and the teachers, like, what can we do to be a team? So we have this like way of serving this child through the transition of leaving home and going into school. Do you have therapists that you work with? Did they understand the ins and outs of the child's actual entrance into school? Can we get everybody on a call? Can we do anything to give us a slight edge to make this something that feels less scary? And that's a lot of what I do, is just sort of saying, how do we all get on the same page and look through it through like a collective lens, and not just the one scope of what we're really good at, right? The thing that we know what we do. I'm not an SLP. I don't know anything about speech and language in a clinical setting that I could provide support in that. So I'm not going to speak on it until I talk to the child's SLP. That's super important. But when you squeeze people out of the process, especially parents, it's so disjointed, and then it's disjointed for the kid. So I don't know. I think that's it. I think all of this really comes from a place of like, it's the parent's experience and it's the kid's experience.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And letting the kid know that they are seen, that they are heard, that they are loved, that we're going to support them.
Yeah.
Is going to empower them. And oftentimes when we're able to do that, in that collaborative way, some of the steps, I mean, to school refusal, you know, some of those steps are not big asks, they're not big lifts. It is in the moment heavy, and in the
mm-hmm.
moment a lot and overwhelming with a lot of feelings. But if we can kind of just take that, you know, 100-foot view and say, all right, what is our first step in the end goal of this action?
Right.
We can break it down and start, you know, almost like goals, right? Our is a goal with our objectives of like what one level is going to get us to the next step.
Right.
And
right.
How do we know what success looks like? What does that look like?
How do we measure this?
How
right?
are we measuring it? That's right.
And is it realistic? Can we celebrate the small wins for everybody?
I hope
you know?
so.
And
I want
that,
to.
I want. For sure. You know, absolutely.
How do we help families? Kind of, we really have talked a little bit about this just now, but just feeling heard when a parent, or I mean, when a professional says, just wait and see.
Okay. I really like this question. Just wait and see is such an interesting thing in the world of child development, education, special education. So, and thinking about this question, going back to the idea that perhaps there's some undue pressure in what kids should be doing and when. And especially when it comes to academics. So if you have a five-year-old at the beginning of the school year in kindergarten, and they know all their letters, they know all their sounds, they went to preschool, they're showing all sorts of signs of reading readiness, but a parent comes into a teacher or a pediatrician and they say, listen, my kid's in kindergarten, they're not reading chapter books. I have a cousin's sister's aunt's veterinarian's uncle's daughter who is reading chapter books. And I also have a friend who posted a picture on Instagram of her daughter going to Barnes and Noble to buy chapter books, and she's only 4 months older than my daughter, right? It is very fair for the person that you're going to say, I hear that you're concerned. I hear what you're worried about. Let me explain to you some scaffolded steps that have to do with how reading unfolds and what is age appropriate and why you don't need to be concerned about this particular area, but you can support your child's scaffolded skills getting better and becoming more and more of a reader and enhancing more and more reading readiness without totally crushing their desire to read, by the way. So just waiting and seeing in that situation is great, Wendy, because you know, the skills are developing, they're coming, they're showing up, but it's in an appropriate way. And also it's great that some kids read chapter books in kindergarten. It's also fine that some kids don't. We don't need to make that the new standard because that's the coolest, like, new trend on whatever influencer who's just decided that that's what goes on, right? So again, going back to your ideas of who's my expert and what are the age appropriate guidelines, and can I look at that window and say, okay, my kid is following a trajectory at their own time, at their own rate, on their own development. And then there's the scenario where you know that something is not moving along the way that it should. You see how your kid is struggling. You see the frustration level. You see what's happening to them. Or you're looking at your data sheets, you're looking at whatever your resource is, and you're seeing that there are some missed benchmarks, quite a few, or skills are falling back. And you think, hey, I want to talk about this. And you go to an appointment and someone says, pat on the head, just wait and see. Kids do things at their own time, and it doesn't sit right with you. In that moment, it is okay for you to say, and I like to empower parents with this, thank you so much. I value your opinion. I still would like to have some resources to investigate this. Do you have numbers for me? Do you have handouts for me? Can you direct me in a way where I can do my own research to make sure we agree? And that's not confrontational. That is not you being angry. That is you advocating not just for yourself, but for your child. You can ask for community numbers from your pediatrician and your school. You can research with your local public school and your community resources programs that are in place for early intervention. You can talk to a direct specialist about developmental screenings. There are tons of things that you can do. It does not have to stop just because one person says, let's wait and see. You do have to be healthy about it. You do have to realize you have to investigate what's age appropriate. You can't just, you know, fixate on every single thing for your child and become consumed with these data points, but you are allowed to say, no, I'd like to collect more information. I'd like some more resources. I appreciate your opinion. I want to know more. Totally great.
With that, how do we support parents? And I like how you're going in kind of without the judgment part, but our parents that are carrying guilt or grief.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Oh man, I think there's a lot of shaming in parenting right now. I mean, there probably always has been, but it just feels like it's very, you can see it a ton because of social media. I think the world's super divisive. There's like just a global pandemic. There's a lot happening for families, a lot of pressure. And when you're already thinking about real life stuff and trying to figure out how to get through your daily adult life, somehow now you feel like you failed your child or this isn't what you imagined parenting would be. It's super easy to turn on yourself or your partner, right? It's super easy to not see the light at the end of the tunnel. I totally understand that. But I think what's important is that people who are deciding that they want to support parents for in whatever career field or support kids or support families, I think you can honor and leave like total room for the fact that it's very difficult to parent. I think it's okay to acknowledge that. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that it's overwhelming and that there are sources out there, whether it's therapy or close friends or hobbies or things that make you feel empowered. And a parent is allowed to pursue that, not because it's selfish, but because you can't pour from an empty cup. We talk about that all the time. So if a parent is guilty or feeling ashamed or feeling scared, it's okay for them to focus on themselves to feel better. And that has to be in a conversation that people have. You have, I wish it wasn't true, but I feel like I often have to give license to my clients for them to take care of themselves. So that's how I personally feel like I bring some level of actionable item to my parents when they feel all of those feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. To give them that platform, because when you're able to heal and feel supported as a parent, you're going to show up more for your kiddo.
Completely. Completely. And I look, we know that's easier said than done. I mean,
A thousand percent.
we talk about it all the time, right? But it still needs to be done. Like, it's still something that has to happen. You still have to encourage moms and dads and caregivers and guardians to feel what they're feeling. It's not wrong. Sit in it. Who are the people and what are the things that make you feel a little bit better each day? Because you're going to need them a lot of times when you're signing up for a world of special education. I mean, this is not a quick race, it's a marathon. You're going to need long-term support to make sure you're able to do what you need to do to advocate for your child.
Yeah. And I like that you said that. It is a marathon and it's not a one and done. It is a marathon. I mean, parenting in essence is a marathon. And so giving yourself that permission to take some time for yourself, get some respite care. And there's even agencies out there that can provide some respite care for families so that you can start to process and take care of yourself as the adult so that you can then be that advocate for your kiddo. And with that, how do you help parents then that have all of this experience in the moment with their family, with their kiddo? How do they bridge that gap? How do you help them bridge that gap between what's happening at home and reporting that to the school so that you can start to get the ball rolling, right? So we're kind of talking about the little littles, but then also the preschool aged kindergarten kind of heading in that direction.
Okay, so there's like layers to that answer, but I think when your kiddo is entering a setting, and I'm such a fan of preschool, I think it's so great to put your kiddo in a preschool setting because a lot of times the things that you might be worried about, you're going to get other people's opinions on and other sort of understanding. You're going to have other perspectives that help you get a big version of your child other than in the home setting, right? So something that can occur for a parent is that you need to make sure you're open to the idea that how your kid shows up in other settings in school may be different than how your kid is showing up for you. You're their safe space. A home is, doesn't have 11 other or, in older classrooms, many more kids that they're competing with for attention or toys or activity. So you have to realize and really critically think about the fact that different environments bring different facets of your child out. So the first thing you can do is say, I'm really interested to know how my child is doing in this environment. What does homeschool communication look like? What is a way that I can make sure I'm hearing your data? How do I not overwhelm you teachers and you admin? Because that's important too, because the teachers have other students in the class. I wish that it was true that we just had a curated individual preschool experience that it was just meant for our child, but it's meant for a group. So, I'm a huge, huge fan of stating in a non demanding, but just like, hey, I'd really love to collaborate with you. I really want to hear from you. What is the best way to chat with you? What is the best way to talk to you about it? If it's parent teacher conferences, great. If you need more than parent teacher conferences and you want something that comes home each day, and there's tons of daycares that do that now, that's a big ask as kids get older. But you have to decide what you need and the level of communication that you want. Because if you're nervous about your child's development and you're putting them in other settings and you want to get information, you have to find the kind of place and the kind of setting and the kind of caregivers and teachers that are going to provide you the information you're looking for. As your child's aging, what you can do is sort of look at how they're doing. Are the struggles staying the same? Has the school suggested you pursue intervention? Have you followed all of their directions on who to reach out to? Kids bite in preschool all the time. That's a big one. And, that is something that happens when they're frustrated. It's something that happens, because they're little and they're impulsive. It also can be connected when kids are frustrated because they can't express themselves with expressive language. So, are you listening to the school's information about a category of behavior or instance that could be a cue that you may need to talk to a specialist? Look at all of the years you spend with your kid before they enter in kindergarten. What are the things that seem like consistent struggles? What are things that you want to start the evaluation process with your school? You want to, like, if you're not doing early intervention and the first time you're talking about this is when they're entering school, you're going to want to meet with the school and they're going to give you a parent input statement. And you want to really be intentional with that parent input statement. That's true of all IEPs. If there's one thing that this I want people to take away from our conversation is that your parent input statement is so important. Don't leave it till the morning of or the night before. Spend time. This is another reason why collecting data all the time is really helpful, because then you can just look at that data you've collected. Don't be afraid to add a supplemental letter. It doesn't have to be just that sheet with the four questions. You know, really use that parent input statement, because that has to be considered. It has to be thought about. It doesn't mean they have to listen to every single thing you're saying, but you do have to be considered as a meaningful participant. So those are the things, right? Like, really pay attention to those areas so you can get more information and you can make educated choices and be provided a chance to say what you want and say what you think and say, you know, be a part of the team.
And to add that with a parent input statement, that
Yeah.
is then setting the documentation so that in the future, you
Yep.
always have something to refer back to of this is what the parents saw, this is what the parents' concerns were. Did we meet those? And then also kind of, but thinking about that, if a child is entering kindergarten, they receive an IEP and that IEP is going to follow with them. Then you're forward thinking in, okay, this is what I would like for my kiddo, 6 months, a year, 2 years. That's going to change, but at least you're starting that thinking. And then if there's resources, you can start accessing them or know that resources are available at a certain age or developmental stage so that you can then make sure that you have this constant flow of what you need and what the kid needs, I should say, more importantly.
Correct. And that, like, to your point, that flow chart is super important with early childhood, right? We're talking like little until grade three, because what's going to happen is that as that flow is happening, different opportunities for testing, more specific understanding about their low learning profile, you're going to learn more about whatever that original coding was or may remain. You're going to dig in a little bit more because their abilities might change, their learning profile might change. You might have access to testing that you've been on a wait list for. You know, that you're going to start to learn more, so you can actually, it can be true to their story because you're guiding it that way. And I think schools, I feel like schools, for the most part, in my experience, appreciate when parents are transparent and they're communicative and they have realistic expectations, but they still want to advocate for their kid.
Let's talk about IEPs and an IDEA, because I think for parents, if you have a preschooler and they're entering kindergarten, can you tell me and tell us what that looks like for parents if they're receiving early intervention, then moving into kindergarten, we're talking about public schools, what does that mean for them? Because sometimes there's a little bit of confusion of what these services look like in different settings.
Sure. Okay. I think this is so helpful, because there's a couple actionable items that you can, if your child is receiving early intervention services right now, there's a couple things that you can do to help yourself and your child a year from now. So something that happens with early intervention is that parents are, and parents in general, actually, we're just trying to go day by day. We're just trying to get through the day.
Sometimes
What
hour by hour.
minute by minute, Wendy, minute by
Yeah,
minute.
we'll
But
get there.
you have a case manager, you have someone who is supposed to be a resource, a river of information for you. Well before your annual reviews, well before sort of revisiting with the team of what your support plan looks like, and before you enter into the IEP world, but you are receiving early intervention through infants and toddlers, for example, talk to your case manager about transition plans. What does it look like? What information do I need to know? What are the timelines? What sort of data are you going to be looking at from me? And what are the potential options that we could be talking about? And they can't give you specifics because that would be predetermination, but they can shoot through the parts of an IEP. That is such a, like, beautiful thing for you to know, because, and how it will change once you leave something like infants and toddlers and enter a school setting. So use your case manager to really ask clarifying questions, and do it well before your annual meeting. Do not wait until a week before. These people are busy, they are working, they are stretched so thin, they are doing the best work in so many ways. But get on their roster to ask general questions. Who, what, when, how? Explain it to me like I have never done this before, because I have never done this before. That is a huge phrase I give my clients. Tell people, explain this to me like I have never done it before. Because you've got to get a general knowledge before you can ask specific questions. So if you have early intervention, if you're currently getting early intervention from your state, you will have to go through, again, an idea of what and how your child will qualify and if they will need an IEP for a classroom setting or a school setting in the public school world. That, your document, the wording's going to change a little bit. Depending on the program that you were in, the dynamic can change for the program you're going to. So talk to your case manager. And I am a huge fan of reaching out to, if you think you're going to your homeschool, like reaching out to the homeschool to set up a meeting with them. Again, collaborative, not demanding, but just like, hey, trying to tell you where I'm at. I want to be transparent. How can I add to this team? If you're if you're going to go to a service school, because you have to go to a different program than what your homeschool can offer, then I think making sure the school team at your service school knows that you would also like to communicate with them and that you are just in on the progress. You're not trying to inundate them with emails every morning when they wake up about like, where is my child's bow that I sent them to school with? Like, that's not what you're doing. You're not seeking that kind of data. You're seeking to have information so you can support your child in their be homeschool connection. It is important though that parents have a realistic idea of what is going to come back and forth from the school. So you've got to give them plenty of time to respond. You've got to know what you're asking, but also know that you've got to say, hey, I have no idea what's happening. Can you break this down for me? And I think school teams really respond to that. I think IEP teams really respond to that. I think the world really responds to that. Like, hey, explain this to me. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And, you know, I don't want people to go in and act like they're ignorant, because you are the expert to your child, but you don't know your procedural safeguards by heart. Ask for them, you know, like, you don't have, Wendy, we don't have that down pat after all these years of doing this. Like, we have to refer to our notes. We have to go to our training. So a parent saying, hey, what are these procedural safeguards? You emailed them to me. I'm reading them, but can you break them down for me? Talk to your case manager. That kind of get to where you are, what you're asking about.
Yeah. So I also want you, if you don't mind, to kind of talk about what is early intervention? What is infants and toddlers? Because I'm thinking there may be some parents listening that may be like, I'm not sure I understand. What am I starting with?
Okay. So when you, let's go through like a specific scenario. You go to your pediatrician. You're like, hey, I'm concerned about speech for my child. Let's just do speech. No, let's do gross motor. I'm concerned my child is not rolling over. That is a early benchmark. It's not happening. I've been waiting for a good amount of time. I'm here. It's my wellness appointment. Can we have a developmental chat about that? The doctor says, yeah, you know what? I also feel like there should be movement towards that now. There are private scenarios where people can seek private PT, private developmental screening, private options. There is also state-provided choices, community-based programs that allow you to qualify. You have to be screened and qualify to receive that early intervention. Here in the state of Maryland, there's a home model where people will come and work with you and your child and coach you as a parent on how to support your child in that experience. So that element of early intervention, a parent has options to pursue what their county or what their state can provide to them to investigate it. You do have to qualify for it. It's not like I instantly get it. You do have to qualify for it. And there are certain things that qualify you for it, which investigate your state, investigate your, you know, investigate the qualifications in general. We know that you should do that state by state for a variety of reasons, right? But early intervention is something that can also be, if you have people that you trust who are private PTs or private SLPs who are working with early childhood, because that's really important. You want someone who has a skill set to work with the age group that you're talking about. You can have them help you and support your child in a clinical setting, and also give you ways to support your child just as a parent, like you things that you can do that will hopefully help that child practice that skill, all the while monitoring for other signs of developmental milestones not being met. And those teams also help you with that. When you reach a certain age and it's about time to start talking about school, you know, I would really think about talking about it at the start of every sort of school year or every session that you've been, that you qualify. I would say a few months in, say, hey, when can I get on your books to talk about what happens after we've been doing this for 6 months, after we've been doing this for 12 months, like get on their roster to communicate about what happens next. So the annual meetings don't come up as a surprise to you. So I heavily rely on your caseworker. When you start to transition and we have to move towards you going to school, Then when you enter kindergarten, there is an IEP in place. Again, depending on if you're in your homeschool or a service model, that IEP is the document that sort of stays with you and your placement. And that will be like any other IEP for a school-age child will be, you know, your supports, your modifications, your goals, your objectives will all be written down. But the language looks a little bit different and they're more age appropriate to being in a classroom.
What are some questions that parents could ask at their first IEP meeting that they rightfully so would not necessarily know to ask?
Okay, at their first IEP meeting and they've qualified and the IEP has happened. Like we know the IEP is coming?
Yes, let's go there. Okay.
Okay. All right. So you've done screening, you've qualified. We agree that special education has to be a part of your child's. We know that their disability impacts their ability to access the curriculum. We know that they've been provided the IEP, they've qualified.
Yes.
Okay. So one, have you seen the draft? Are you going into that meeting without seeing the draft? Nope. You need to see that draft.
Yes.
You need to know, and don't look at the draft the morning of. As soon as you get that draft, which again, explore your timelines on when you should be receiving that draft, look at it and really understand what the coding is, what they said they qualified the disability to be, right? And then the areas that are impacted, make sure you understand the breakdown of that, those areas impacted. And then to me, parents should really understand when they talk about the supports that are in place, ask, what does that look like? So if my child is in kindergarten and they're receiving access to what's one we see all the time, preferential seating. Okay. We see that all the time, right? So what does that actually look like? Explain to me what that looks like for my child and why that's valuable to them and why you selected that. And what about all of the data that we've collected, whether you all did the evaluations or I provided the evaluations from private sources, why was that selected? Ask why, ask why, ask why, ask how, ask how, ask how. And then when you get to the goals and objectives, I think it's just really interesting because this is the part that I think is so like jargon, like we spend so much time as educators talking a certain way and speaking a certain way that we forget that parents have not done this before. Most parents have not done this before. So when you
Even
get to
when
the
they
goal,
have done it before, right? So
yeah,
think about all the IEP table meetings that you've sat at as a professional, right? So think about a parent, you have kindergarten, and if that IEP is going to stay up to, you know, through the time they graduate high school and sometimes, you know, beyond depending on age and situations, but that's only a handful of times. So if this is my second time, say I have a first grader and I only sat at the kindergarten, all of this is still new,
and
right?
It's a lot.
And
it's a lot.
A lot. And it's a lot.
It's a lot. So as a general rule of thumb, look at the draft and then look at your supports, ask the hows, ask the whys. And when you get to goals and objectives, ask the team to explain to you why those objectives actually meet the goal that they're seeking. Like, how do they measure and truly meet what the long-term goal is? And even just for the parents, I think that's a great breakdown to show the small scaffolding that happens between what the student can do and what the student can do with support and all the work that happens in the middle. And I think that creates a great space for parents to see progress that they may not think is progress. It also helps the school really understand in those conversations if a kid is already doing some of those things at home and if the goals and the objectives need to be adjusted to really meet what's happening in the classroom, especially for kids who are new to a classroom environment, a public, like their public school environment, a larger number, right? So those are my things. I think look at the draft, make sure you see it and understand it. I think really dig into why the supports that were selected, how are they being used? And I think it's your meeting too. So in that meeting, as a parent, you are allowed to say, why do these objectives actually meet the needs of this goal, the expectations of this goal? I think that's a great launching point. I think if you do those things at every meeting, you're going to find some level of success of understanding and collaborating together.
Also, I want to add to that, that as a parent, again, kind of looking, you have X date that you have this meeting, and we're looking backwards and we know, you know, ask for the draft, or you can just say, hey, you know, 2 weeks out, when can I expect a draft of this IEP?
Right.
And, you know, and you can even say, I'm not saying that we're locking in on this. I just want to review it. I know we're not predetermining anything, but as a parent, I need to review this so that I can be an informed member under my rights at that IEP table. And
I want to meaningfully participate. I want to be there and be an actual participant.
then also I want to add in terms of excellent point of when and when we're talking about when are services taking place and asking what that looks like, also ask where. Is it, is it on the playground? Is it in the lunchroom? Is it during transition? So who is going to be providing the service that we're talking about? What does it look like? When, where? Why all your W questions so that you then what you are envisioning aligns with what the school is thinking is going to take place, and that better informs you as well in terms of, oh, they're getting speech language. Well, is it where is it in the school? How many times? What happens if the teacher, the professional's out? What happens if my baby is out? Just so you have that understanding as well.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think knowledge, again, we're going to go back to that every single time. Knowledge is power. If you have the information, you are going to be able to ask real questions and also provide data that the school needs. A great example that I thought of while you were chatting was it wasn't a service, but it was a support, and it was an instructional support where they were able to, no, it wasn't instructional. They were able to have access to headphones during certain parts of their academic day. And this has happened more than once in the meeting. A parent asked a great question. The conversation unfolded about what it looked like, and the parent was able to say, "Well, I will tell you from a sensory perspective, those headphones, my child, it triggers them. They do not like it. They do not want it. You can provide access, but it can't be something that is, it has to be provided in such a careful way, and they're not going to use it." And that I think was just, it was the school was trying to be helpful. They thought it would match the child's learning profile. They didn't know him that well. They thought it was something that would match the data that they had. And the parent was like, "I am telling you that that might be something that sets us backwards." So the why, the how, the who, right? And I think you have people who are looking at this IEP in different capacities. You have your people who are providing services. You have specials teachers. You've got homeroom teachers. You've got all these people. And if someone goes to present that those headphones to a kiddo, and that's a big spiral moment, that could be bad for everybody. Right. And it's how do you know the child? And the parent was able to look through everything carefully and say, "Nope, that's not for me." And that's happened more than once. So you made me think of that when we were chatting.
I also want to bring back the parent input statement and that we know that needs drive services. So the team is going to prepare their present levels of performance, that how they see the kiddo and interaction with data. And as a parent, that need that you see at home is equally as valuable, and why it's so incredibly important to have those organized thoughts down on paper so that you can help really tailor and craft an IEP, that individualized, specialized instruction to meet your kiddo's needs, because needs drive services.
Needs drive.
Services don't drive our, we have to start with needs.
There's your t-shirt. I'm telling you, like learning essentials. Like that's your needs. I love it. That's your bumper
Exclamation
sticker.
point.
It's your t-shirt. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, again, we go back to that theme of is the parent's opinion being valued, right? And is the parent presenting it in a way that is helpful to the school team. And look, I mean, the team when a team works, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. It's
Love
the
it.
most beautiful thing in the world. The most amazing people, the most amazing parents, some of the most devoted teachers, some of the most careful and thoughtful admin. I mean, there's a
Yeah.
lot of people who want to do the work, and it's hard. It's a hard thing, and there's a lot of struggle, and there's a lot of fighting, and we talk all the time. Sometimes we're discouraged, sometimes we're frustrated, sometimes we're tired, sometimes we don't understand. But there are a lot of people who are trying to do the right thing. And, I think there's so much beauty to that right now. And we can't ice parents out of that experience because that is the gasoline that will keep them going for this very long race that might be in front of them.
As we wind down this amazing conversation,
Not leaving, sorry.
I love it. What is something that I should have asked that I didn't know enough to ask?
When it comes to early childhood and when it comes to infants and toddlers or, moving on to the next thing, moving on from the earliest stages of thinking that developmentally you've got to do some extra work there. I think that it would be helpful to have conversations with parents about this whole like just right goal thing and like finding things that are challenging enough for your child that they grow and doable enough that they don't get frustrated. Because in early intervention, and when you, and again, everything that I think of is, little to third grade, but there's so much that's happening there with going from little to big, independence, growing our skills, developing. And if parents can assist schools and teams and ultimately themselves and their child by keeping their relationship intact and building a bond and being, relationship first and caring about their kiddo, but also finding ways to keep them growing by finding those just right Goldilocks goals, not too hard, not too easy, just right. I think there's such beautiful teaching, like really finding those just right goals, not too easy, not too hard, just right, but celebrating the small wins too. If you can get in that mindset of, I'm connecting with you, I love you, I'm here for you, I'm fun, but I'm firm, and I am interested in finding things that challenge you without frustrating you, or frustrate you just enough that when you achieve it, you feel great and accomplished and confident, right? Like I think there's such magic to that, and there's a lot in the world right now that is sending mixed messages to parents. And I think if you can stand by that, relationship first, just right challenge, and I celebrate your small wins. So much teaching. It's not just parenting, and parenting is the most important part, but you are really creating an awesome environment that sets your child up for success in school settings.
We could totally have another podcast on just right. I
I just
mean, it really is so important in terms of big picture, little picture, and finding that sweet spot between I need to give you a little push and a nudge and, doing something that may be a little uncomfortable and then celebrating that so they that a child can build the confidence within with the skills that may be lagging.
Completely. Yeah. And that those lagging skills, right? I mean, it in that th that's another thing that could be a whole nother podcast is this idea of the behaviors that we see sometimes reported from school environments or preschool environments or daycare environments. Sometimes those behaviors are actually just really, really excellent indicators on what we should be looking at, like the biting, hitting, impulsivity, the things that we see that are showing us perhaps there's like a larger picture. They're not coming to school or they don't want to ruin the entire experience for themselves and for others. It's so oversaid now, but like behavior is communication. And, we don't have to make kids change so much of themselves that they're just like not enjoying their daily life. But we do have to look at their behaviors and be like, what do you need from me? How can I show up for you? And teaching parents to do that and investigate and research and observe, there's a lot of work there. There's a ton of work there. So that could be a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, and looking at those just the neuroaffirming lens with that and the support of a kiddo of what do you need from me that we're not just kind of making you a mold to align with X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, right. And there's a lot of expectations on little kids right now to be
Oh
very big
boy.
kids. To be
Yeah.
very big kids. And is that age appropriate? Is it something? And maybe that's like look at programs that align with your values. Some kids are ready for that. There are kindergartners reading chapter books. That's awesome. Like I'm really excited for those kids. But there are also kids who feel bad about the fact that they don't recognize letters and they're going to school every day and they're still working really hard,
Yeah.
right? They're working real hard and they feel bad about themselves potentially, So like, it doesn't have to be that way. So those are all, again, we'll have to have seven other podcasts.
Final question. If you had a billboard for a parent, what would it be and why?
I had a billboard for a parent.
Yeah, quote on
Okay.
a billboard for a parent, what would it be and why?
Okay, one, I love that you asked this question. And two, I'm totally disappointed for myself. I don't have like my answer prepared.
Well, you have sprinkled a lot of wisdom. So I feel like it's not a not prepared. I think it's just how do we pick one out of all of the awesomeness that you provided.
Yeah, but I want to have like a rock star moment where I say something that you're like, whoa.
Be a rock star moment. It's going to go viral.
No, I don't want to go viral. I feel like it would be great to tell parents that you're allowed to be optimistic, right? Like you are allowed to hope and you are allowed to feel like you can make something be positive about. You are allowed to feel optimistic. You can make this go better. It is not out of your hands. That's a long billboard. But I think parents have power.
Been on 95. There are a lot of them. We could have them, Mike. sequential.
I love that. Like have hope. You are allowed to have hope. You are allowed to. And if you have that hope, that and you can stay like strong and positive, then you can affect things that do affect the trajectory of your child's educational path. Like you are allowed to be optimistic. Don't look at reports that are this big and data saying not achieved or not ready or grades. Like look at your kid, look at their face, be with them and be hopeful, be optimistic. Everything will be better. I mean, it really will. So that's it.
I love it. And I love you. Thank you for joining
you.
Me.
No
so good. And I will put in the show notes where people can find you.
Okay, that'd be great.
I appreciate it, Jackie. And until next time.
You got it. Thanks, Wendy.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.